Where the devil are we?
We're going to International Detective Dragons from outer space to do an opening bit.
But I thought that was New Jersey. This is some kind of frozen wasteland.
Actually, it's a metaphor. What does this have to do with little pieces of cake dipped in chocolate?
Not pettifor, you simpleton. Metaphor. This wasteland represents the lack of challenging thought in the regular media and much of the internet as well.
Oh, right. I was just, testing you.
Even I'm not buying that one.
Hey, guys. I see a door up ahead.
I don't see no building or anything.
Neither do I, but there's freestanding doorway at the top of that hill.
Okay, Mr. Smarty Pants. What does that represent?
Obviously, that is the web address for Portal for the show.
Oh, well, I suppose that was way too easy. Are you guys coming? I want to get out of this chill.
Welcome to the Stratospheric Veranda, gentlemen.
Nice digs.
I expect the silverware to remain where it is. Are you a member, sir? If not, all you have to do is put your pin in that map over there to become one.
Oh yes, I've been a member for quite some time. I'm Kurt the Camera Guy from the Wandering Geek Podcast, and these are my guests, the voices in my head.
Ah, very good, sir. May I take your coats?
Here.
Thanks!
Don't wrinkle it.
Obliged.
I'm afraid our host isn't in yet. Something about corrugated purgatory, I believe. Do make yourselves at home. There's a buffet to your left, and the view from the railing is quite spectacular.
You can see a long, long way. I believe that is so one can get the big picture.
Of what? I mostly see the tops of the clouds.
Why do I bother?
Hey, I don't think I like the looks of that guy by the bar.
Why do you say that?
Yes. What doth make you uneasy about him?
He's got hired muscle written all over him.
All I see is a long snout, scales, fedora, and a trench coat, but no writing.
You guys should try the food. They've got a lobster stir-fry to die for.
Hey, what are you guys looking at?
Reginald.
Don't call me that.
Alright then, Rocco suspects that the creature in the long coat and the brimmed hat is working counter to the desires of these patrons.
Well, I know the direct route usually works best out here on the veranda. Let's go ask.
Hey, Mac, who are you working for?
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.
Oh, he's the announcer guy for the show. I'd recognize that voice anywhere. Let's get back to the buffet.
Lobster stir-fry, you say?
Yeah, it's delish.
Oh, a nice Reuben would hit the spot.
Do they have cheddar biscuits?
Do they have salad? I'm watching my figure.
Hello and welcome, or welcome back to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Anum 5, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to episode 42. This episode's topic is a continuation from episode 41, which was Transhumanism and Idiosyncrasies. Lots of great listener feedback for this show, made greater still by the fact that we get to hear new input from listeners that have been silent up to now. Who will we hear from? We'll hear from Dickie the Stealth Geek, Big Jack Brass, Raphael, Cersei, and a custom-crafted audio response from Kurt the Camera Guy. We'll have new member welcomes to the Frapper Map and the IDD FOS forums, news, shoutouts, and loads of other comfy fun just as soon as we get past this short bit of audio stuff. So, stick around. I'll be back in a bit.
Bad news, part two in F sharp.
Moriarty.
Yes, what is it, goodbye? What is it?
Take a letter in gargling fluid. To the Postmaster General. Dear General. According to the shape of my knees, I believe that an illegal raffle for the equator is being held. And for certain monies, I will reveal the organizer. Let's have that back, please.
Thank you.
You filthy swine. You've watered my peony.
Okay, welcome, welcome, howdy, hello, etc. Welcome to the top of episode 42. And the beginning of this show, I think, must start with an enormous thank you to Kurt the Camera Guy for that superb section of audio dramatization which you heard at the beginning of the show. You know, sometimes I think that multiple voice characterizations of the type that he uses and I sometimes use, they're kind of like getting multiple camera angles on the same scene. And it's very tough, it's very difficult making them interact with each other, making them a part of a real environment, making them distinct from each other. And it's a unique talent, and it's a talent that Kurt the Camera Guy definitely displays. It's no easy task, that kind of editing. Not to mention the time it takes just to script the thing. Hats off and a sweeping bow to you, Kurt, for yet more richness that you add to this podcast. You want more quality, folks? You want more richness? Then check out The Wandering Geek. That's Kurt's podcast. And you'll find the link, of course, in the right-hand column on the IDD FOS homepage. And I might have missed this myself if I hadn't spoken to Kurt a short while ago, but those personas that he has, those voices in his head, well, they all have names. They all have distinct personalities. And while one of them goes by the name of Rocco, we hear his actual name revealed back there in that opening, which he seems to be embarrassed about. Now, how much geek can there be in a guy that has voices in his head that have aliases? I have a feeling that as time goes by, they're all going to take on lives of their own, and he'll have to take steps to keep them under control. Or he won't take any steps at all and let them do whatever they want. Hey, they're his voices. It's none of my business. But things are happening there that everyone should keep an eye on. What next, though? Well, top of the show means welcomes, and we've got three welcomes to the Frapper Map. Let's begin with a warm welcome to Chris Kepner from Elkins, West Virginia. Chris had this to say when he placed his pin on the Frapper Map. Great podcast. It's funny and a very interesting listen. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed, Chris Kepner. Extremely glad to have you with us. Who else is new on the Frapper Map? Well, I was very happy to see a pin posted by the Encaffeinated One, or Encaff One. Who is he? He's the host of The Weird Show. And the Encaffeinated One had this to say when he placed his pin. Still catching up from the past. Savoring each episode. Well, that's most excellent. I thank you very much for placing your pin. You remember The Weird Show that I was talking about a couple of episodes ago? The show that I've been catching up on myself? The show that I'm extremely jealous of? Well, if you don't, go and check it out. That show, of course, also has a permanent link on the IDD FOS homepage. Now, I'm going to welcome Raphael also to the Frapper Map, mainly because I note added art, added photo material in the Frapper Map photos. And while I don't see a pin, I imagine it might be that Frapper could be playing the same kind of games with Raphael that it was playing with me when I first started trying to get it to work. But I'm going to welcome Raphael to the Frapper Map anyway, and hope that in addition to the added art, I'll also see a pin from Pasadena, California. We're going to hear from Raphael also later in the show in listener feedback. So it's a good time. It's a good time to be camped out on the stratospheric veranda. In keeping with our intro, I think we're going to have something of a special menu this time. Menu for this week is as followed: poached live Maine lobster accompanied by homemade mushroom ravioli, savruga caviar, and as a light palate cleanser for that first course, orange sorbet intermezzo. Main course will be prime-aged beef tenderloin, premium-aged and highly marbled for intense flavor and made to melt in your mouth. That selection will be complemented by potato puree and winter root vegetables in a Pinot Noir demi-glaze sauce. Capping it all off will be a vanilla souffle for dessert surrounded by candied pecan petit foies, Madagascar vanilla bean anglaise, and a pulled sugar swirl. The beverage? Orange soda from Walmart. Next, we welcome to the forums, Circe from Seattle, Washington. Thank you very much for joining the forums, Circe. We will hear from Circe later on in the podcast in her response, a forum posting that she made in response to the Skype chat one with Nev and Sarah that concentrated primarily on Second Life. And speaking of Nev and Sarah, check out the Does My Geek Look Big in This podcast feed. If you made the mistake of taking it off your list of RSS feeds to check, I'd recommend going and adding it again, if only for this American-made episode, the one that Sarah and Nev mentioned. Well, in Skype Chat 1, they mentioned the American-made episode by Chris and Raphael, or Tuhill and Raphael. That is now in its entirety available on the Does My Geek Look Big in This RSS feed. Well worth the listen, and excellent job there. Excellent job there, gentlemen. Thank you very much. All right, brief notes on news. Continuing with news, Fistful of Comics and Games and The Game Master Show. Why do I bring these two podcasts up? Well, they include examples of further attempts to say gudikatingatangatungs to represent show notes. And of course, you'll note that since episode 21, that word is used in place of saying show notes. And while I certainly find it very gratifying to note that the phrase itself, the word itself, has made it into the consciousness of other podcasters, I have to repeat, just as I did in the TikTok Diner episode, that it is a very dangerous thing to attempt. Trying to say that word can be hazardous to the mind and the linguistic centers of the brain, and there's just no need to risk it, I'm telling you. No need to. Just say schnotes, like Dragon's Landing, or Shiggity Show Notes, as in The Stealth Geek, or Shockuments, or whatever. There's no need to say it, but I do thank them for the attempt. One last bit of business before we get to the actual body of the show, which is, of course, listener feedback, and that is a recommendation to check out a certain podcast that I would not have known about if I had not listened to The Stealth Geek, and that is the Geologic podcast. One of his promos was played on The Stealth Geek, I think the last Stealth Geek episode. Now, I will tell you up front, just so that you know, this is not by any stretch of the imagination a kid-safe podcast. It is not politically correct, it's not family-friendly, it's an R-rated podcast. It's adults only, definitely, but this guy is good. Speaking of vocal characterizations, this guy is very good. And I do, just with that caveat, knowing that there is foul language in the program, I'm just going to let you know ahead of time, I'd recommend checking out two or three of his most recent episodes. I think I actually checked out the Geologic podcast when it was about, I don't know, 12 or 13 episodes ago. I don't remember why it was I didn't keep up with it. Maybe I caught a bad episode or whatever, but just downloading the last three, I laughed out loud. There are several points in it when I laughed out loud, and I don't want to keep that to myself, and hats off and a thank you to Dickie for including that promo in his show, because it pointed me back to the Geologic podcast. Adults only, folks, remember. And if it's not your cup of tea, well, give it a miss. But if you want to check it out, I found it funny in many places. All right, we're going to cut to a break. Oh, this disappoints me, this business of the Seven Wonders of the World. There's just been a vote on what the seven wonders of the world should now be. And the results came in, and I can't find the list. I'm finding articles that list the seven wonders of the world, those that made the final cut, and seven wonders of the world, those that have disappeared, and those that were in the running, and they mixed them all together in the article, paragraph by paragraph. No one has just put a list, 1 to 7, of what the actual finals were for what people voted for. It's like, just, all right, you had the vote, the votes came in, what are the results? No, they give me this article that's like peppered with all the different things that were, things that are, things that made it, things that were nominated. It's like, don't make me cherry pick what the actual winners were out of the article, which, by the way, I'm not even sure you can do. Just show me the damn list. Frustrating as hell. I imagine I'll find it. If I find it, I will post the winners, the seven wonders of the world. Why is this important? I don't know. I seem to recall something to do with the seven wonders of the world in episode 21 or 22, something like that. I'm losing my mind because I can't remember what it was that was significant about that so long ago. So instead of trying to overheat my brain, I'm just going to cut the break now. And when we return, we will hear from Dickie the Stealth Geek. Back in a bit.
What's it say, Gritpipe?
It's from our landlord. Dear sirs, owing to complaints from the tenants of the other sewers about your singing and owing after 11 o'clock, I do hereby give you notice to quit.
Or if you like it. Gritpipe, we've been given the registered boot. Kicked out, sewerless. Without a street over our heads. There's nothing but the water we stand up in. Gritpipe, you're not listening.
Hmm?
You're not listening, Gritpipe.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was just reading this advertisement on the back page of my suit. Listen here. Wanted man for exploding. £1,000 offered for a genuine Charlie in good condition. Apply the Sultan of Dirtistan.
£4,000? Gritpipe, with that, we could build our own sewer.
Exactly. Moriarty, I have an idea.
Okay, then, this first listener feedback, this first email response on this show topic, transhumanism and idiosyncrasies, we hear from Dickie the Stealth Geek, and the subject line is augmenting the meat sack. That's tough to say, augmenting the meat sack. Well, it was the first time I said it. All right, anyway, Dickie writes, "Hey, Annam. Been a while since my last email, hasn't it? Kind of sucks, I know. We both know how much you've been missing my ever-so-insightful and terribly intellectual comments. Yeah, right. In any event, I've got a couple of short notes on your topics du jour. Transhumanism. The concept and application is an easy decision. If someone can offer me technology that'll make me less of a meaty shell and more of a $6 million man, sign me up. Like James, I think that as a species, we should make use of every avenue available to us to improve ourselves. And honestly, who wouldn't want nanomachines somewhere in our bodies that repair any wound in minutes, or bones that never break because they're laced with titanium lattice? What about removing a cancerous organ and replacing it with a vat-grown biochemical one that actually functions better and more efficiently than the human one ever could? Now for something that came to mind while following this train of thought. Corporations love to throw their logos on things, claim things, copyright things, etc. So when people are slapping down thousands of dollars for the hottest new cyber eyes that all of their friends are getting, is part of your body now owned by Sony? And you know that they would try to use this new avenue to pump a stupid amount of advertising, or at least as much as they can, out of your shiny new piece of cybertech. We've already seen sites like Golden Palace who will pay wads of cash to people who will wrap their car, get a tattoo, or anything that'll give them exposure. Why is this any different? Also, would there be vastly cheaper yet
ad-supported versions of the same technology. For example, you hear an alarm in the early morning and wake up to the sight of "This day has been brought to you by Sony," projected on the back of your eyelids. It's an interstitial ad that you see every time you close your eyes from the hours of 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. The only way to get rid of it is to upgrade to Sony Black Cat CyberEyes 6.5 Pro. All in the name of supporting the advancement of the human race, right? Another thing. What happens when, not if, but when, this technology fails? What's the warranty and liability policy on your shiny new CyberEyes? Is going potentially blind because of a glitch in the firmware of your eyes really worth being able to see in the dark and have crystal clear 20/10 vision? Or what about someone who has those nifty little nanomachines installed that heal you up? What happens when those machines glitch and start eating some poor sap's white blood cells because it recognizes them as foreign bodies? Before anyone points out the obvious, yeah, I know, I haven't answered anything. In fact, I think I've done nothing but raise more questions. But that is the nature of speculation, I suppose. It's also the nature of this podcast, so good on you. Anyway, done with that. Next, idiosyncrasies. I've got 'em. Hell yes, I've got 'em. All change must be stacked at all times in order of circumference, meaning dimes go on top of nickels. I drum my fingers in impossibly complex patterns that I've memorized for some reason or another. I can't even explain how those patterns work. If I'm playing a video game and get stuck at a specific part, I must defeat that specific obstacle before I sleep, go have a smoke, basically do anything that involves not defeating whatever sticking point I've reached. Slightly OCD, sure, but these qualities are part of what make people who they are. Anyway, that's all I've got for you, dude. Sayonara for now, Dickie. Thank you very much, Dickie the Stealth Geek. Interesting points, and absolutely true. Wouldn't the things we buy, wouldn't the things we opt for, as soon as they become commercial, as soon as they become commodities that individuals can afford, and I don't know how far off that is, really. But as soon as that becomes possible, will you get maybe a discount on the item if you allow some kind of a brand name to be on it? I remember when I was still in school, we had a new chairman of the theater department come in after the old chairman retired. And one of the things that used to drive the faculty nuts about this guy was the fact that he would wear these extremely expensive tailored suits. And he would drape the jacket at any meeting. He would be sure to drape the jacket of his suit. You could count on this. He would drape it so that the label was showing, so that the inside label indicating just, I don't know whether it was Armani this gives you an idea what my clothing budget is. I have no idea who a top-notch, extremely expensive designer would be, but this guy would drape the jacket always so that the label was sticking out so everybody could see just what kind of suits he had and what he could afford. I think the other thing that drove people nuts about him is he would be late for curtain on opening nights of shows that were being put on by the school, and they'd have to hold curtain for him because he was coming back from having dinner somewhere with guests. Nobody liked this guy, and I didn't either. And I don't care who knows it. Not going to say his name. Those who know who I'm talking about, you know who I'm talking about. Anyway, what about that? Do you think people will buy CyberEyes or replacement limbs that have the super top-notch, most expensive logo on them, just like they buy $200 pairs of sunglasses because they have the special brand name, personal body enhancement one-upmanship? I think Dickie's onto something here. I could certainly see it happening. And what do you do? What would happen if your nanobot enhancements, if your cellular micro-level nanobot enhancements started eating you to pieces from the inside? Well, we'll hear a little bit. That's probably something that would happen to early adopters, and we'll hear something about that when we get to Kurt's audio
Kurt's audio piece. That's in a direct response to this later on in the show. But for now, I'm going to go directly to the next piece of listener feedback, and it comes from a forum post by Big Jack Brass. Big Jack Brass of Manchester, England. And he writes,
"A fascinating subject for discussion, and another excellent episode, I might add. In fact, I shall. Somewhat unhelpfully, I'm not going to be taking it to its logical conclusion as requested, but rather jotting down a few thoughts I had whilst listening to the show."
He's referring, of course, to episode 41. And thank you, by the way.
"For what purpose would we be improving the human body? It strikes me that humans are already perfectly suited for the true achievement of mankind. Loafing. Through our ability to either get others to do work on our behalf, or else to devise time-saving machines to free up more leisure hours, we are able to lie around and contemplate the universe. From the idler, not the industrialist, do we get philosophy and jumps of logic? No one else has the time. You can bet that wolves have a pretty poor time at debating societies because they are too busy hunting and simply staying alive to develop any thoughts in other directions. The Greek philosophers were great loafers. Mark Twain understood its importance, too. A few years ago, I recall an interview asking Stephen Fry if he was fit. Fry pointed out that fit means suited to a purpose, and that as a writer, he felt that his current physical condition was ideally suited to sitting in front of a word processor and smoking 2 packs of Marlboros a day. By specializing elements of our bodies, we risk diminishing the overall adaptability of the whole, which has made us so capable of surviving across the globe and changing whole land masses to suit our whims. Aside from the obvious military potential and uses for improving the lives of those with disabilities and limited function in some areas, the notion of manufacturing superhumans seems decidedly frivolous. Luckily, as an idle fellow and work-shy fop myself, I shall feel..."
I love that phrase. I'm going to put that on a t-shirt, too. Idle fellow and work-shy fop. I'm sorry.
"As an idle fellow and work-shy fop myself, I shall feel no need to engage in the inevitable one-upmanship that would follow such advances. Transhumanism could simply be the high-technology equivalent of those gadgets we see on infomercials, solutions to problems no one actually has. The trouble with mankind is that we are always looking for the magic bullet, and more often than not, we shoot ourselves in the foot with it."
And that was from Big Jack Brass. Thank you very much, Big Jack. Excellent. Well, we've almost already covered that. We pretty much kind of made your point for you in the early episodes that paid so much attention to Quinn's gorilla. The primary point behind all of that being that human beings were actually already evolved to a life of leisure and contemplation, and that we screwed it all up as soon as we started plowing up fields. Though, as you say, in those instances in modern civilization where there are individuals that have the time to think of new and interesting things, they're usually not the ones spending all their time with their nose to the grindstone. And we certainly don't need to fix what isn't broken. In fact, we'd probably end up breaking ourselves, i.e. shooting ourselves in the foot. So, excellent input there. Thank you very much. We're going to cut to another break, and when we return, we are going to hear Kurt the Camera Guy's audio response to today's subject, another well-crafted piece, and I'm not going to say anything further about it. I'm just going to let you listen to it once we come back from the break. Back in a bit.
Oh, my head. What? Microphone. Thank you. Hello, calling folks through the megaphone, folks. What's happened, folks? Where are my folks?
All right, Nitty, drop that speaking trumpet.
Who are you, sir?
My name, sir, is Hercules Gritpipe Finn, and the teeth resting in this glass of stale beer belong to none other than Count Jim Ping, Moriarty.
ace knee slapper, and king of Pong.
Ow, ow, ow.
Did you hear that, Seagoon? Once again, Moriarty. Ow, ow. Oh, melody divine.
Ace. Never mind those ows, divine. What's going on?
My dear postman, pull up a floorboard and I'll tell you a likely story. Because of your excellent service in the parcel smashing department, you are being promoted to corporal postman and sent to a better job.
What? You mean I'm going to be posted?
Yes, registered, of course.
Oh, happy day! Huzzah! Huzzah! Huzzah!
Moriarty, get a floor cloth and mop up those huzzahs, would you? Neddy, Neddy, stand to attention now and close your eyes.
Right.
Moriarty, get that pad of cotton wool and soak it in chloroform.
All right. Now what?
Now hit him with this iron bar. Splendid.
Okay, and next up, as promised, a recorded audio response to this episode's topic, and this from Kurt the Camera Guy. Give it a listen.
Hi, Annam. I was recently testing the 56K modem in my computer and somehow ended up in a weird quantum time loop and stumbled across this away message from a MyGrid account. I'm not exactly sure, but it sounds like it's from around 2037. Now, anyway, you might want to give it a listen. Hey, geeps. If you're sculling this, then I'm logged and on my way to Bodyworks to get the mods my mom promised me for my birthday. I can't believe they make you wait until you're 18 to mod anything that's not cosmetic. I would have thought they would have changed that when President Hilton signed the law that gave 14-year-olds the right to vote back in 29. I guess some stupid traditions die hard. I mean, the fossils in the capital G don't mind when their clinics put cognitive implants in so we can download schoolwork, do they? Man, I'm glad I found that cog hack so I could use them for VR grid games instead of just boring history lessons and stuff. I'm still not sure what I'm going to get. I got it narrowed down to the Angel package or the vampire, because both are cool, but they don't mess with your face. I still want to see me when I look in the mirror. I'm leaning against the vampire, though. I hear the nanotech that removes the melatonin from your skin makes it itch every time you're exposed to UV. But the angel wings don't let you fly either, just glide. Maybe I'll just do the basic immortal with the O2 boost upgrade and upped sense package. Of course, if I get something I don't like, I can always get it fixed later. Body Shop 2.8 has reprogrammable RNA sequencers and exchangeable nanobots. Not like the poor bastards that did it in the original version. The one that created the subraces back in 24. Can you believe that people wanted to be their WoW-X and Dark World characters in RL? What's the point? You can be them in VR and change them whenever you want. I mean, don't get me wrong, I can see the elves. They're pretty cool looking. Hell, I've got an FB that's one and she's really hot. Well, her ears are way too long, but I can get past that. And the dwarves and rainbow folk are okay, I guess, though they don't make me glitter. But those orcs, who would want to look like that? They had to move them all to a reservation in Arizona so mundanes wouldn't have to look at them. I hear it's the nicest concentration camp you'd ever want to live in. But there weren't many double X's willing to go green either, so those boyos must be mondo lonely. I hear that a stack of them signed up for the military since there's a lot of mod overlap with the Army of One package. They send them down to the southern border with Guatemala where they scare the glop out of illegals trying to get into Chiapas. We can all thank the early adopters for figuring out the problems in the system, I suppose. Kinda like when all those people got sucked into the early VR grid 20 years ago, never to be found again, all due to a flaw in the Windows Quantum Firewall. They were able to get into the grid, but WQ wouldn't let them back into their bodies. Nothing will tank a trillion-dollar company like brain-wiped bodies being found all over the world on your launch date. I heard a rumor that some of them are still in the grid working as AIs for game companies, but I don't know if I snagged that. Mom was worried about my picking immortal mods because of the restrictions about not having kids if you're a long lifer. And I had to remind her that I could change it later if I wanted to have kids, but if I had kids first, I could never lengthen my life. I skull-loaded a story about a case working through the courts involving mixed couplings of short-timers and immies, how they should be allowed to have kids. I'm not sure I feel about it. I guess I'll have to download some opinion stuff if it gets appealed from the Supreme Court and we all have to vote on it. Maybe they should be allowed to have one to replace the short timer. Our birth rate has plummeted over the last 15 years since that law went into effect. Grandpa says I should be happy with what I've got and not get modded at all. What does he understand? He still uses that antique AI wetware tablet. Can you believe it? It doesn't even have a neural interface. You have to tell it what to do and touch objects in the hologram just to make it work. When I tell him to upgrade, he goes on about touch screens and self-contained computing and silicon chips, whatever those are. Then he tries to tell me that they used mice to control cursors on computer screens. I think he needs an RL check. The only mice I've ever heard of are the biotech surveillance mice that Capital G uses, and they upload their files, not control computers. I'm not sure if he's bugged or trying to gank me. He says that if we ever lose the broadcast power service, we'll be lost without the net feeding us information all the time. That we should learn it on our own. Shows how much in touch he is. It never goes down. Well, not since before I was born, anyway. And he thinks we shouldn't let the Capital G put the cogs in our heads either. Something about giving away too much control over our lives. I'm not sure why he says that, but it's something to think about. It's just something silly. I'm sure the government has nothing but our best interest in mind. Well, I gotta go. Mom's blipping me. Be back, OG, in a few days. Scan you later.
Speaking of unique perspectives, isn't it great to give social flavoring to ideas and speculations when you refer to them in the past tense, or as a personality living them as they happen? I don't know how much further into the future this is going to be. I really don't. When you consider how quickly things have changed in so very short an amount of time recently. But thank you extremely much once again, Kurt the Camera Guy. Excellent. It's great to get recorded audio like that. And anyone else that wants to send in responses by way of MP3 or even by way of a quick hello on the audio button, that's certainly still active, still works, and I can still make use of that. Give it a quick click on the IDDFOS homepage. You can use that. Or record an MP3, record an audio file just as Kurt did, send that in. Every time I've gotten something like that, it's been a quality piece, and I've been very happy to play them on the shows. And who shall we hear from next? Next, we are going to hear from Raphael. And I'm very glad to know that Raphael is a listener of IDDFOS. You may or may not know that he is one of the two individuals that crafted the Does My Geek Look Big in This American Made episode that I mentioned at the top of the show, the one that's now available on the Does My Geek Look Big in This RSS feed. Between himself and Chris, they put together a very enjoyable listen. But Raphael writes, subject line:
Where doesn't the geek look big in this? Hi, Adam Five. Well, you might as well call me one of the silent majority, I suppose. Actually, perhaps unheard majority. I spoke out often while listening to past episodes of your delightful pod show, and nobody answered, which is probably not strange, since nobody was around. In any event, I am one of those seedy and unpleasant types who sneaks into your website and pilfers the direct downloads and doesn't even leave a signature riddle, written in letters, cut from newspapers, and pasted onto non-watermark pieces of paper whilst wearing gloves to mark my passage.
Thank you. I'm glad you don't do that. Please don't. That's really kind of creepy. But no, that's fine. I highly doubt that you're seedy and unpleasant, but I'll just continue here.
I have yet to skewer the greater Los Angeles area with a virtual pin on the Frapper map, to my shame and embarrassment, but perhaps after I finish this, I will erase that shame, at least from my memory.
Well, we do know from the top of the show that you added artwork, that you added a photo image to the IDDFOS Frapper page, and if your aim was to place a pin, then I'll bet it's Frapper that messed that up. through cookie controls or some other thing, whatever. I consider you a member of the Frapper Map just from having written that. Hopefully you can get a pin placed at some point. Continue with the letter, Annam. Brand new feedback from someone we haven't heard from before, and you're just talking all over it. Sorry, here we go.
I am also the Raphael mentioned, perhaps with a snicker, but a loving snicker, by Sarah and Nevster during your fabulous Skype chat with them recently. The Raphael who, along with his pal, Tewhill, created a Does My Geek tribute podcast, which recently went up on the feed. In light of the fact that my name was bandied about, perhaps briefly, I wanted to emerge from the woodwork of the internet and say hello and heap loads of praise on you for what is, more often than not, a mind-warping journey into existential exoticism. And the only mind-warping journey into existential exoticism that I listen to.
That's weird. I should probably add existential exoticism to the keyword list for identifying what the podcast is about. But I won't do that until I finish reading the letter.
Although sometimes the show becomes so intensely serious and deep that I am forced to turn to something more innocuous to avoid descending into morbid seriousness, I hugely appreciate the explorations and the discussions, and the echo, too. So, a pat on the back for a job exceptionally well done. You probably didn't feel the pat, but trust me, it was there.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And I couldn't agree with you more about intense seriousness. I tried to, once I get too mired in that, I try to slosh my way out of that pit onto the shore and find someplace that's selling cotton candy and making twisty balloon animals because I need to get away from it too. He continues.
The pressure is mounting, it seems, for Tewhill and I to churn out another tribute podcast, but your very interesting and really quite successful new adventures with Skype and other internet miracles gives me very devious and underhanded ideas about future ways to jam up the Does My Geek feed, which I hope will be well received and actually come to fruition. So, in short, please accept this email as a hello and an introduction, and I look forward to many future episodes of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. Best of days, Raphael.
And he is in Pasadena, California. Well, excellent. You'd certainly get no objections from me. I certainly enjoyed hearing that episode. That the decision, of course, as far as what jams up the Does My Geek feed, as far as what appears on the Does My Geek feed, well, that of course is entirely up to Sarah and Nev, and I certainly hope for you. I hope it's well received by them, and I hope it does actually come to fruition. If you come up with some more quality work, but those are my good wishes, and of course the final decision is entirely in the hands of Sarah and Nev. But I was very glad to hear that show. I was very happy to hear that show, and I recommend everybody else to download and listen to that too. And it's good to hear from you. It's good to hear from Raphael. New listener feedback, and I do hope that you will write the show again, either on new topics or any of the older topics in any of the older episodes. That goes for everybody else. We're going to cut to a break, and when we return from the break, we are going to hear a forum post that is a direct response to Skype Chat 1, the one we've been talking about with Nev and Sarah, and it is from a new forum member, Cersei. And we'll hear that after this, back in a bit.
Dear Lord Plunger, I enclose a snapshot which I accidentally took while passing the window of your seventh floor flat. I never realized you and Mrs. Fitzherbert were such close friends. As you are an art collector, perhaps you would like to buy the negative of this naughty photo. P.S. If you go to the police about this letter, I didn't write it, and I don't live here. Oh! Who is it?
It's me. Can I see you?
I don't know. Can you see me?
No.
Thank heaven for that.
Okay, then. As promised, this forum post from the new forum member, Cersei, well-written and a and positive feedback regarding Second Life as a whole. I'm going to stop describing it and read it. How about that, Adam? Okay, here we go. Cersei writes,
I am one of those individuals that is totally and utterly into Second Life. After deciding to give it a go when Sarah was talking about it on Does My Geek Look Big in This? I had heard of it years before, but it never had appealed to me, really. This is partially because I'm heavily into gaming, and it didn't seem like the sort of thing that a gamer might get into. I have played all sorts of MMOs, most recently EverQuest 2, and that is what I knew, in addition to many other PC and console games. Second Life didn't seem like a game, so why would I be interested in it? Well, I was right. Second Life is not a game, but that doesn't make it any less of a powerful, entertaining, and rewarding experience. My first days in Second Life were like those of many others that have started, very confusing and nearly annoying enough for me to quit entirely, but I pushed on. I described Second Life to my non-Second Life gaming friends as a 3D chat room and Barbie Simulator 2.0, where you can pretty much do anything and be anything you want. If you can imagine it, you can almost certainly do it. And I did find out you can actually game in Second Life, whether it be fighting with katanas, playing a Second Life version of Settlers of Catan, or chess, or even full Sims server areas, devoted to detailed RPGs of all sorts, vampire, cowboy, sci-fi, etc. But any one of these experiences most certainly have more polished brethren in other commercial games and the like. What is powerful about Second Life is that you can do it all in there whenever you want. Move from sim to sim, change costumes, and off you go. I like that I can sign on and be what I want to be from night to night, minute to minute. Goth vampire, pirate captain, one of my faves, ninja, a fox, whatever the mood or situation calls for. I also like that I can basically create whatever I want when I want. I need a new hat, then bam, I hook up some primitives, and texture them, and I have a hat, or a pirate ship, or a church, or a dojo, all of which I have created, and many more. It does take time to learn how, like any other skill, but once you do, there is a feeling of power to be able to take nothing and make something right there in front of me to enjoy and have others enjoy. I've even started selling items I've created in Second Life, my pirate ship, actually, and so have embarked on a journey as a merchant there as well, which is exciting. Second Life is also about people, and I developed many awesome friendships in the game with people throughout the world, and we can all take advantage of what Second Life has to offer: music, exploring, shopping, dancing. Yes, I know it sounds weird, but it is a lot of fun. Or whatever. Second Life does have its seedy underbelly, to be sure. It is not safe, and I like that. The experiences you get in other online worlds is typically very sanitized to be able to allow them to sell to a general public. Second Life is like a virtual window on the real world. Anything that happens in real life, both good and bad, can and do happen in a sort of hyper-reality. It is really a very difficult phenomenon to describe to people who have not been in Second Life and experienced it, but I also know and understand Second Life is not for everyone, and that is okay. But for me, it is a lot of fun and rewarding, and as long as that continues, I don't see myself leaving the grid permanently anytime soon.
And that from Cersei, new member to the forum, and thank you very much for that feedback on Second Life. I have a feeling there's going to have to be some kind of a future episode of IDDFOS that gets back into specifically Second Life. There, immediately after this post, I mean, the implications, we covered some of the implications of online realities in episode 16 and 17, but there's a uniqueness to Second Life in that it's got overlaps with the real world that all these MMOs that are marketed as games, and they are in fact games, don't have. Aside from the bad press that games like World of Warcraft or EverQuest have. When that makes the news, when that leaks over into the real world, it's usually because someone's complaining, my kid won't get off the computer and spends his entire life online in this game. It must be a mental disorder or a disease. Please help me because I certainly can't discipline my child. Or I don't have the self-control to stop playing this game so that I won't lose my job. Stories like that. And a very interesting difference about Second Life that's brought up partially in this posting is the fact that Linden Labs set the world up so that you could, in fact, make real-world cash within their environment. They've set up an online reality where you can purchase items within Second Life through shops using real-world cash through PayPal accounts, etc. The merchants in Second Life are making genuine real-world. Well, they're making Linden dollars, and the Linden dollars can be sold for real-world cash. And one of a post that was immediately made after this particular, immediately after Cersei's post on the forums was by James, pointing to an article where one of the online entrepreneurs in Second Life is in fact going to real-world court, going through the legal system to try and file a lawsuit against another Second Life member who supposedly is infringing what he considers to be his copyrighted material. In other words, he's created items in Second Life. They're X-rated items. They're meant for cyber sex. But this online entrepreneur, this Second Life merchant, is going after someone that supposedly is copying his stuff and selling what he considers to be his merchandise online and making money at it. So how is this going to be handled in the court? A lot of this stuff is groundbreaking. Just the fact that this digital real world comes so close to and repeats or emulates, duplicates real world problems and sticky legal issues is just a fascinating subject all by itself. And we covered it a little bit in Skype Chat 1. But I think this will be worth looking into again in depth. If anything, to find out a little bit more about what's in Second Life. And I've in subsequent Skype chats, I mean I've spoken with other people. I've got other Skype chats lined up to be posted, and in one of them I made mention of the fact that one of the reasons that I personally am not into it and haven't worked to get involved in Second Life is because of the fact that I know my time for anything else would be gone. I mean, if you check out the Gurukatengatangatongs for episode, actually for Skype Chat 1, you'll note a repeated link to models that I made for another virtual world. So you'll know that I'm not a stranger to creating items in a 3D world, that I've got quite a track record, actually, of putting together virtual models. And that if I got really into doing it again, if I got really into doing it in Second Life, I could kiss this podcast goodbye and probably all of my waking free time hours goodbye getting into that. I'm always late with... I'm always 2 or 3 years behind in everything, particularly things that might actually make me some money. Because if I had skipped Active Worlds altogether and just gone straight to Second Life and set up a merchant account, all those items, all those 3D models, I could have been marketing myself. I could be one of the premier entrepreneurs trading in Linden dollars for real world cash. Like this guy in that lawsuit article, this guy apparently was making. This guy apparently sold his plumbing business. Plumbers make a lot of money. Plumbers make a hell of a lot of money, good ones anyway, the ones that work all the time. And to sell a plumbing business so that he could get into Second Life modeling full-time means he was making a considerable amount of cash. Oh, well. All right, I think we're going to cut to another break. I'm going to have a little bit of commentary, I guess, on transhumanism myself. Thank you extremely much, Cersei, for that forum post. And I certainly hope you'll continue to add any further insight you might have on any subject on IDDFOS. Back in a bit.
Back, Nitty. Hands up.
But you haven't got a gun.
No, but I'm thinking of one.
Well, I'm thinking of ringing the police. Eccles, think of a telephone.
Oh, good.
Hello, police. I want to report a man.
Nitty, put down that telephone that Eccles is thinking of.
I refuse.
Then I'm thinking of shooting you.
Well, I'm thinking of the bullet missing me and hitting Blue Bottle.
Hey! You had it, weren't you?
Wow. Moriarty, what are you thinking of?
It's the way you say it, folks.
You filthy swine.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not. The Pond of the Apostles in Chipperfield, England, is circled by 11 lime trees, each named for an apostle. A 12th tree named Judas was blown down by the wind, believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about a fantastic burglar alarm. The fabulous Moon Gate of the Imperial Palace of Ofang near Beiping was built 2,300 years ago of solid lodestone, a magnetic iron ore, as a protection against assassins. The magnetic attraction of the Moon Gate would betray anyone attempting to enter the palace with a concealed metal object. Thus, Ofang's ingenious Moon Gate, anticipated by more than 23 centuries, the electronic eye. Believe it or not.
Okay, then. I don't have a lot to add. I know I say that now. I don't know where this is going to go, but so far as what was said in episode 41 and what's been brought up and explored here in this episode, there aren't many other places I can go with this as far as the topic of transhumanism, as far as the topic of improving the human being. The only thoughts that I have on it run along the lines of improving the human being on a permanent basis. That being genetically, that being something that is passed on from generation to generation. And I would say that doing that, genetically messing with humanity, is probably more dangerous than any other application of science I could think of aside from atomic weaponry. But just going crazy with it, just letting the mind go where it will as far as what you may or may not want to do for human beings from one generation to the next, a passed on set of improvements, if you want to call them that. I can't even call them that, just possibilities. I don't know that there's any way to be able to tell whether they'd be improvements or not, except to find out whether they were catastrophically bad decisions. I'll start with ducks. Or I should say geese. We've got Canada geese that drop by with their little goslings, in the industrial park where I work. There are open fields of grass in front of many of the buildings. And they land and they waddle around and they just eat grass. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be a cool improvement to the human race as a whole to make people capable of eating green foliage, of eating and digesting and getting nourishment from grass and leaves. If all you needed to do to feed yourself was gather up whatever was mowed from your lawn, provided, of course, you know, it wasn't completely infused with an incredible amount of chemicals. And who's to say that farmed vegetables and things that we eat now aren't already infused with all kinds of chemicals? But if you could just eat grass, or you just grab anything green, leaves off the trees, weeds, because, you know, you see grazing animals getting pretty big and pretty healthy. Now, I don't know how physiologically that would change us, but whether we genetically have to somehow work into the human physiology four stomachs like a cow has, or whether it could be done with current physiology, just a single stomach, whatever. Making human beings capable of eating green stuff. Then your whole agriculture situation becomes moot. You don't have to level fields. You don't have to reap and sow and plow. All you have to do is make sure you've gathered up enough green stuff and put it on ice to make it through the winter, depending on where you live. And if you don't live where the greenery goes away during the winter months, then you're ahead of the game that way. I wonder what that would do. What would that do to the world economy? What would that do to the population problem? I guess the other another improvement might be longevity. If there was a way to, if not make human beings naturally immortal, i.e. death from unnecessary means, accidental death, notwithstanding, but just incredibly long-lived, maybe triple or quadruple the lifespan of human beings. What would that do to the population problem? Genetically making human beings from one generation to the next altered to the effect that they could drink seawater without ill effect. A physiology that could filter out the salts and safely dispose of them as waste product rather than having seawater be ultimately a poison that will destroy your body if you try to live drinking that. What would that do? And suppose you have that quadruple lifespan, then what are you going to do with all that time if you don't have to farm? If you don't have to worry about where your next meal is coming from, because all you'd have to do is go outside and pull some leaves off the trees or gather up some handfuls of whatever grass happens to be growing outside and then prepare it with spices as a nice hot meal. Making use of technology, non-genetic alteration of the human being, the other place the mind wanders, of course, is the human-machine interface, where years from now, maybe in 2020, like Kurzweil thinks, having reverse-engineered the human brain, coming up with computing technology that is beyond the capacity of the human brain, because that's on the way, having machinery that's that complex, having chips or matrices or whatever is made use of to do our computing 10 years from now or 15 years from now, making use of that and tying into it directly with the human brain through whatever interface, either a pill swallowed or a chip implanted or whatever, and having online worlds or broadcast internet, wide area broadcast internet signal worlds that you can step into and step out of at will. What will that do to humanity as a species when we're living, when we're almost living in our own mental constructs instead of in the actual world? Well, it's been explored, of course, in fiction. Unfortunately, it's probably going to be likely that all the problems that we have in real life are going to get translated and transposed or transcribed into those mental constructs. But 3D property of the type, whether it's for cyber sex or not, or whether it's just a particularly attractive and well-designed sofa, 3D property and virtual property will certainly take on more of a reality than it has now. But I can't really go any further with speculation on this without repeating what's already been talked about, what's already been asked so far by listener feedback. And I'm very glad that folks decided to write in and explore this. So I think I'm going to leave this now, and we'll go to the snippet for our old-time radio offering, our old-time radio episode for this week. I don't know what it is. I apologize, I haven't picked it out yet, but here's probably 30 seconds to a minute of what that show is, and I'll be back after you hear this.
Well, I tell you, just for the fun of it, we're going to make it more lively. Boys, bring out the sack of live frogs. Now, those are the live ones in there, and they're really live frogs. Believe me, we went to a lot of trouble to get them. See them jump in there? Now, you give people their choice, either a live frog or a dead frog, but you must give them away. Talk the people into it. Say, frog legs are wonderful. They're edible. They taste a little like chicken, you know. And give them away, even though they haven't been cleaned. I mean the frogs, not the people. Now, go to as many houses as you can, and if you manage to give all your frogs away, we'll give you $100 worth of our fine prizes. Now, Mr. Atkins will drive you to a nearby neighborhood, get you back on time, and by the way, if they ask you where you got the frogs, you got any idea where you go frog hunting around here?
No.
Well, say the La Brea Tar Pit. They get everything out of there.
Okay, well, now that you've heard it, I can tell you what it was because some time has passed. That was from People Are Funny. Art Linkletter had a show out called People Are Funny. The whole series, so far as I know, isn't really available, but I think something like 10 or 20 episodes still exist and available through Old Time Radio. That's one of them. And that show in its entirety, of course, will be available as a download from the IDDFOS homepage. It's only about 25 minutes long, and having listened to it, I note that the very end of the show kind of trails off into music, which probably would have been commercial time, and the closing announcement also isn't a part of the show, but that particular episode is yours if you'd like to give it a sample. Some amusing stuff. All right, then. I think we're at a point where we can come up with a topic for episode 43. Something that I hope people will feel strongly enough to write in about with their feedback. And the topic, I think, is going to be internet content, quality, or crap. Now, if I could please direct your attention to the Kutikatingatungatungs for episode 41. Under links for this episode on the IDDFOS homepage, you will see a link that's titled The Cult of the Amateur. The link reads Article Link to an Unpopular Outlook. And what that outlook states, well, let me put it this way. The content being created is through blogs, podcasts, and wiki-style sites, where a fellow named Andrew Keene seems to think that that this new version of the internet where the users create the content is a bad thing. He compares it to the infinite number of monkeys and the infinite number of typewriters. I'll quote one thing from the article here.
Today's technology hooks all those monkeys up with all those typewriters, argues Andrew Keene, who believes that Web 2.0 is killing our culture, assaulting our economy, and destroying time-honored codes of conduct.
Further down, he states that
these exuberant monkeys are creating an endless digital forest of mediocrity, uninformed political commentary, unseemly home videos, embarrassingly amateurish music, unreadable poems, essays, and novels.
This, the attitude of Andrew Keene. I wonder if you agree, disagree, what your opinion is on this. Are all these new voices, are all these new sources of content, whether it's in creative format or supposedly nonfiction, digital truth, technical information, etc., whatever it is that Mr. and Mrs. Internet have to offer, is it of value or is it not? I'd urge you to follow that link, read that article, and write in or record what you think. And we'll make that the topic for episode 43. Thank you, James Stubbs, for providing that link through the IDDFOS forums. And with that, I think we'll get to the end of show music to wrap things up. And that piece is going to be from the Magnatunes website.
Magnatunes, We Are Not Evil, podcast our music.
This is a piece called Outer Cape. It's by Jamie Janover. It's from his album called Evolutions. And this performer is an absolute master of the hammer dulcimer. Please enjoy this.
Thank you.
I wish I had that kind of talent. I really do. That's just exceptional musical expertise. Very pleasant listen. Alrighty then, we have reached... That was Jamie, by the way. That was Jamie Janover. The piece was entitled Outer Cape, and it is from his album Evolutions. Please find him and his other work at Magnatunes. And so we have reached the end of episode 42. I'd very much like to thank Kurt the Camera Guy for the wonderful intro, the wonderful opening for this episode, also for his audio input regarding this show's topic. Very creative and very in-depth. I'd like to thank Dickie the Stealth Geek, Big Jack Brass, Raphael, and Cersei for writing in, and I'd like to thank you for listening. I hope you'll join us for episode 43. That is the episode, of course, in which I will be explaining why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes very well for you. And until then, best of days.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of...
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.